This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Coach Mike Vrabel, OTAs this week for the New England Patriots. A lot of concern coming out of OTAs over the Drake May 4 interception day. But first, good morning, Mego. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderfully because I see that the sun is coming out in the window behind you. Which I feel like it's the first time that I've seen it in 4 days, maybe. Yeah. It's been brutal. It's been brutal around here.
Thursday was especially bad with the driving rain, the thunderstorms. We had the pregame for our road show down the Cape on Thursday night. The power went out at the Trading Post Lounge.
That's kind of cozy, though.
Yeah, well, you know, it was. We were packed in there like sardines, so it was a little hot, but it was great. I mean, we had a lot of fun. Luckily, the power came back not too long thereafter. Some of us had left. People like Wiggy, though, stuck around and got to enjoy the rest of the night, but then we got to have an awesome road show down the Cape on Friday. So
my issue with these types of stretch of weather is the dog. I have a long-haired dog. I have a Siberian Husky, tough. And she's not usually smelly, but like we got to spend at least an hour outside every day.
Yeah.
Like she's a working breed, and it's just tough for your girl coming back, because then it's like you got the everything's wet.
That
for
wet
some
dog
reason,
smell is everywhere.
Why don't pants dry? Like jackets will dry, pants will never dry. I get back from walking the
it's
dog.
Probably the material.
And
is
I
my
hang
guess.
Up the fancy $100 sweatpants that I bought when I was going through a depressive phase. And I like hang them up on a railing, and it's 3 days later and they're still not dry. And I'm scared to put them in the dryer
because
I don't
want to
shrink them.
Yeah, 100%.
And I spent so much money on them when I was, you know, clinically low.
Yeah. No, it's a weird thing. I guess it's a materials thing. I don't know. I'm not a textiles guy, but I would assume that it has to do with the material of the pants.
Anyway, happy to see the sun. Was happy when it came out briefly during OTAs on Tuesday. I was there watching the entire practice, all the competitive periods, and the four interceptions from Drake May.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta ask, like, for your show, is this something that anybody is actually concerned about? Or is it a lot of people sitting there and saying, well, no one's actually concerned about this, right? Like, everybody's saying the context around it, it's May. You can't seriously be concerned about four interceptions in eight attempts from Drake May when we're sitting here in May.
Yeah, I am not. I am not the least bit concerned. We had Rob Ninkovich on the show yesterday. He was not concerned at all. He even mentioned how sometimes, especially in OTAs, they design it so that the defense knows what the offense is running, and the defense kind of has an advantage. And you're going to find yourself in situations where the ball's going to get intercepted. It happens. But, like, I just look at it as one of the interceptions, I believe, was a pass down the sidelines to Kyle Williams where Christian Gonzalez made the interception, right?
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's more of a Drake May is trying to test exactly where he's at and where his ability to hit Kyle Williams and them to be in sync is at. And if it gets picked off by a possible all-pro corner, it gets picked off by an possible all-pro corner. Like, that's he's trying to test himself now so that when the games actually do come, he knows, can I make this throw successfully or should I look elsewhere?
To me, the very little brief bit that we got to see, it was just another case of the Patriots offense is miles behind the Patriots defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just grown accustomed to that in the post-Tom Brady Patriots in the summer program. So it's hard to like sit here and be overly concerned when it feels like this is the way it goes every year. I do think that having Josh McDaniels coming in and installing his style of offense, which if you listen to Hunter Henry, he said it's like basically what they were doing in 2021. I don't know if they're going to be adding a lot of bells and whistles, if this sojourn that Josh McDaniels went on in his year away from football, if that's going to express itself in any surprising aspects of his offense. But I think that this is an install of a pretty complex offense, and Drake is learning it, along with a lot of rookies who were out there getting high-level reps, I would say. Travion Henderson was getting lot of high-level reps.
Love that.
He definitely popped. This is all with no contact, so...
And this is all with Ramondre not present because of family issues, correct?
Right, yeah. Right. And Kyle Williams, I thought, you know, at times it's hard to tell with the offense if it's, like you said, something intentional or if it's... guys not exactly knowing where they're supposed to be in the system yet. Mm-hmm. But I thought Kyle Williams overall looked good.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that he looked he looked like a solid NFL wide receiver. And he had the catch of the day from Drake May, without a doubt. Now, the other catch of the day came from Javon Baker. And he had a contested catch deep downfield that was made us all sit up and go, was that number six that was checking our like, that was Javon?
Check the rosters?
Yeah. So, you know, again, put into as much stock as you will with that. But those were my immediate takeaways from OTAs. I am not concerned about Drake's four interceptions.
Yeah, I'm not concerned either. But you mentioned the Josh McDaniels offense, how Hunter Henry talked about how it's going to be a lot of 2021. I know Drake May has talked about previously how it... like, he's excited to do a lot of the Cam Newton stuff, which would be the 2020 stuff as well, which Hunter Henry wasn't necessarily here for. Did you see any of that? Do you expect any of that in, you know, the next couple months here? Because I think that, to me, is the more interesting piece because it'll indicate exactly how much they want to run Drake May. One of his best weapons is his ability to get out into the open field and scramble. I mean, he had almost... 10 yards per scramble last year. And so it's clearly an ability he has. I know they want to protect him, but is that something you believe they'll start to incorporate as time continues to go
Certainly
on?
Certainly wasn't something they were showing Tuesday.
Okay.
And I wouldn't take that as it's not going to be in the system. I would just take it wasn't an area of focus for them.
Yep.
They're still in the period that Bill Belichick always said was the learning period, not so much the competition period. And again, with the offense, they've got a lot to catch up on. I was thinking about this yesterday. I was thinking about Drake May and the concern over interceptions. And on top of that, the other side of the concern is some of the sacks that he took, especially towards the end of the year. Do you remember there were times when it would look like Drake was just running into the defense?
Yeah.
And you'd go, where is he trying to go with that? He's trying to like squeeze through a hole that's not there. What is he thinking? And sometimes it was maybe a miscommunication, but it was very odd. And he had a 9% sack rate. And I think that's another... aspect that he's going to have to bring down in this game. And when you look at what they've done with the offensive line, like we haven't really checked in now that I was there on Tuesday and I was thinking about, okay, you got Garrett Bradbury at center.
Yep.
Who might be more of like a backup level center for most NFL teams.
Okay.
Which
interesting.
Is okay. He seems like a really bright guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's a veteran. He's been around forever.
Huge character guy, but I'm not sure that he's the future at that position.
Correct. Yeah,
you got Morgan Moses on right guard.
Yep. And right tackle.
And he's 34 years old. He's coming back from an injury that he sustained against the Patriots last year. You got Cole Strange, who's at guard, and he's played, 13 games in the last two seasons?
And they haven't been great.
Like, we've been so focused on left tackle and Mike Onwenu, who looked large, he looked large.
Like
on the opposite.
Trent Brown large?
No, nobody looks Trent Brown large.
Just for some for
Mike
comparison.
Onwenu looked big.
Okay.
He looked big.
Oh,
and I think that, you know, whatever. Again, it's May. Got the whole summer.
Sure.
It's not like he's rolling into training camp.
No,
that's
but
where
you'd like
it
to
really
be prepared.
That's where it starts to get concerning.
Yeah.
But... we've been so focused on Will Campbell and his arm length, and you look at the rest of the offensive line, they certainly made some upgrades, but there's still a lot of question marks there. If you're asking Drake May to take a big step forward and continue progressing and eliminate all of or a lot of these turnovers/interceptions, you look what you've put around him, it kind of still feels like the most that they've put around him in terms of an upgrade is Josh McDaniels, and I know that's something that you're not even that high on because you don't like McDaniels' styles of offense.
No, especially if it's just a replica of the 2021 offense. If it's just the Mac Jones offense again, like, what are we doing? Like, that's... that you're taking...
That would be a waste.
That would be an absolute waste of all of the things that Drake May does really well. He has such a stronger arm than Mac Jones. He's so much more athletic. He has so much more big play potential out of him that it's like, okay, let's... I don't know. Let's explore a little bit. Let's go outside the box. Let's not just do it in this safe, conservative offense so we don't turn the football over. Like, you need to also generate scoring plays.
They were taking deep shots.
Okay.
So I'm going
like to
say
hear that
in
least.
The competitive periods, and again, this is all shells and shorts, they were taking deep shots. So it's not like that wasn't existent.
Yep.
I don't know what the point would have been to, like, let Drake scramble. But yeah. There just wasn't
in OTAs,
a lot of that.
That doesn't. Yeah, that tracks. It's more so, did you see a lot of, maybe not revolving around Drake scrambling, but were there any kind of like those read option plays where it kind of gives Drake the opportunity? It's like, all right, I can either give it to Henderson, I can keep it and tuck it, or I can kind of throw it. And granted, he had no intention of tucking it because it's OTAs, but did you see any of that?
Not as much. I think it's still
a
lot of insight. I don't think it's necessarily indicative of what they're going to be doing, though.
Sure.
Like of where they're going to be when training camp comes. The other big takeaways for me, everybody's been talking about, oh, Vrabel, like he's so hands-on. He's everywhere. He truly is everywhere.
Yeah.
He spends a huge time with the defense, and then he runs over to the offense, and he's got his hands all over everybody, and everybody's got their hands all over him.
Mm-hmm.
The team sprints from drill to drill, which is something that I can't remember them ever doing.
Yeah, well, so I heard, I think it was Phil Perry and Tom Curran on their podcast talking about how these OTAs seemed harder.
Shime, they literally full-out sprint.
Really?
When they were stretching at the beginning, it's like, okay, this is typical. Then all of a sudden, the guys are sprinting to the opposite field. And I'm going, oh, that's kind of weird. Maybe that's what they do at the end of their warmups now. You know, you're warm, so then you do a quick sprint. It was between every drill period. They're moving to another side of the field for another drill. Boom, all out sprint. It's kind of unsettling to
this
watch.
This is like what you would do from
like 90 men sprinting.
Yeah, because like this is something you would do with a high school team that has a bad attitude.
Exactly. It's like I got vibes like that was a rule for me when I played travel lacrosse in high school. Like you got to sprint to water. But it looks, because of the size of these men, it looks like something from like that movie 300 or something. Like because
just
they're
a
not in bad, like
men.
Yes, everybody or like Gladiator. You're like, holy crap! And then you get an hour into practice, and you're like, oh, they're still doing it. Okay, here we go.
Maybe it's
the new take him to the hill.
Yeah, maybe it's a way for to help Mike Onwenu make weight. Who knows?
It's fruit.
Yeah, hey, you know, if you show up to practice large, that's what happens. Coming from a formerly very large man, I get it. So one of the things too we talked about with the offensive line. You've seen pictures now, Morgan Moses. I know he, coming off an injury from last season, the age is a little bit of a question mark. He's definitely an upgrade from what you had. But I think more importantly, it seems like he is going to be the veteran presence to help guide Will Campbell.
He'll be a captain.
Morgan Moses will be a captain?
I would I'm not a betting person, and I don't think you can bet anymore.
No, you can't wager on these. No.
Yeah, I would say he's going to be a captain.
Interesting. Yeah, because, and so, we've seen him working with Will Campbell. He's even talked about Will Campbell. He's called him a stud. Did you see any of them working kind of one-on-one together, him kind of showing Will Campbell some certain things, explaining things to him in a way that might help Will progress a little bit more than we would expect?
Certainly. And like, it's not from the position that you're watching OTAs that you're really going to be able to gauge Will Campbell's arm length and go, like, that's unusual.
You're going to have to wait for games.
He is a pear-shaped gentleman.
Yeah, it's not, he doesn't have the natural offensive line shape.
Like, that is the thing that jumps out, is he's shaped like a pear.
Yeah,
like,
normally, offensive linemen tend to have like a bit of a carrot shape, right, where they're large up top. They got those big, broad shoulders because they got the long-ass arms
shape. You remember that thing in Looney Tunes that was like the big red heart monster?
Yes.
That's kind of the shape that you want your offensive lineman to
exactly. And yet, Will Campbell, though, it seems is more weighted like in the waist and thighs area and not quite as broad up top. Yeah.
So I don't know my feeling is with like offensive line play, defensive line play, it's just hard to gauge in this.
Yeah, with
part
no
of
full
it
pads
because
and everything.
You're really just looking at, okay, how much are these guys on the same page with each other? How locked in are they with the program? What shape are they in?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any complete brain farts out there? Like they don't know where they're supposed to be in a drill or when they're supposed to be in. And there wasn't a lot of that. If there's anything you can take away from Vrabel's early presence, it seems to be that guys are buying in and they know that they have to be on their P's and Q's
mm-hmm.
and they're they've got their focus there. Now, it's like very early in the summer.
Yeah,
so when they come back and you're in training camp and it's much longer days and you have the season looming over you, do you maintain that that focus still? I don't know. But I do think that so far, like, it's stupid, in my opinion, to sit here and say this team should have 10 or 11 wins. But I would still take a little bit of the over. Still be at like 9 in my prediction.
I think Jones and Keefe talked about this yesterday, that on ESPN Bet, the over 8.5 is the most bet team total for the New England Patriots at 8.5 is the most bet team total in the entire NFL. And everybody is on the over, it seems like. I believe that the floor for this team has to be 7. I think
that's the floor.
It has to be because of the way you expect Drake May to take a step forward. You expect the team in general, the talent is better. The coaching staff is better. They should be. And the schedule is
soft,
as soft as it can get. You should be 3 wins better than last year.
So if you end up with 6 wins,
that is
you think it's a disaster.
A disaster.
What do you think goes wrong to put you at the floor?
So aside from injuries, injuries aside, my nerves are with the offense. It's that maybe the offensive line isn't the upgrade we thought it was. Will Campbell isn't good. What if Drake May just can't get anything done? And whether that's a product of him not living up to it and taking the next step forward or the offense not helping him, that to me is kind of my biggest concern. As a massive Drake May stan, a guy who believes that when all things go right, Drake May could be a top 10 quarterback at the end of this season. Like, if things go the right way, that's how it could be. I am also very nervous that it could go the other way. And, like, that scares the ever-loving crap out of me.
I think if you end up with 6 wins, it's because Drake May turns into Jameis Winston. Where incredibly likable guy, huge athletic natural
throws
talent.
Throws for 400 yards, 3 touchdowns, but also throws 4 picks.
Exactly. Mm. Has these sky high highs, these lows where you go, oh my God, like he needs laser eye surgery.
Well, so I expect there to be peaks and valleys, right? I have comped him now multiple times too.
Right, he has it the Rocky Mountains? Like,
no,
that's
no,
what
no,
we're talking
but like
about with Jameis Winston.
It should be more like Brett Favre than Jameis Winston, right? Where Favre could go for 404 touchdowns, but he could also have a game where he goes for 200 and throws 3 picks. Like, there will be, I believe, those peaks and valleys.
Do you think there's going to be a 3-pick game with Josh McDaniels there this year?
Yes.
That's going to be brutal. That's also going to be like a 300 gosh darns from Josh McDaniels,
to me,
but less play.
That screams like a mid-season, your record is actually pretty good because your schedule's been soft. Like, we are facing a good team like the Cincinnati Bengals or something, and it's like it's just an offensive battle, and Drake is doing everything he can, and it's just, there's a lot of interceptions. Like that, I fully expect to have a 3-interception game at some point this season. Like, I absolutely believe that. But I would hope that Brett Favre won a lot and also had those moments where it was like, dude, what are you doing? But Jameis Winston has not. So I would hope it's more Favre than Winston.
Did you see the new Untold that is on Netflix?
No.
For Brett Favre?
No.
So just a quick aside with these Netflix Untold series, there was the one that they did with Johnny Football.
Yep.
And that was an Untold, correct?
Correct.
And they did Untold, I think they did Malice at the Palace. That Untold or was that a different series?
I'm not sure.
They've done a bunch of these Untolds. I was looking at the Brett Favre one, and what occurred to me, I was thinking, am I going to sit down and watch this Untold? Because I am a little interested in the whole Brett Favre saga. And then I thought, the Johnny Football one was Untold in that they didn't tell the rest of the story.
Yeah.
It was so Johnny Manziel friendly. It was bizarre. It was like a justification of, because we have NIL now, that Johnny Manziel should have been able to make money off of his autographs and everything else that he was doing illegally at the time by NCAA standards. Whatever you think of it morally, it was unethical and illegal at that time. It was against the rules. And then at the end, they have 5 minutes where Manziel's like living with his mom, and he says something along like, oh, well, I had a lot of trouble with drugs and
yeah, nobody cares about the
substance abuse.
The autograph stuff. Like,
and, then,
and you think
and
back at Johnny Manziel, nobody cares about
that.
And
then it's done.
Half
was
the people don't
so
even remember.
Odd. And I go, like, why are you going to do a series called Untold, where it's as if you're getting into the deep, like the dark underbelly of this athlete or this incident, and looking into what actually led to the downfall. But instead, it's glorifying the highs that we all know from following football. And then at the very end, you go, and then it got pretty bad. And it's over.
It's so weird.
It's so strange.
So if they're doing an untold Brett Favre, it's going to be like, they're going to be like, yeah, he won a couple Super Bowls. Then, like, you know, Green Bay, and they drafted Aaron Rodgers. Then he bounced around to a couple teams. And then, like, with 3 minutes left in the thing, it's like, oh, yeah, then he had this whole, like, thing with, you know, Mississippi colleges and the Pat McAfee show and all that stuff. But we don't need to get into that. It's the end of the program. See you later.
You know how they say that, like, the arc of the universe always bends back towards justice?
Yeah.
That saying? Do you think now, remember when Aaron Rodgers first became the starter for the Packers, and the story was always Brett Favre wouldn't let Aaron Rodgers take any reps in practice. Like, Brett Favre was such a douche to Aaron Rodgers because he knew how good he was, and Rodgers had to wait so long for this. Do you think now it's kind of gone back to that is in Brett Favre's favor?
Oh, yeah.
His character. Because like, Aaron Rodgers is a massive douche. Aaron Rodgers should have been treated that way.
I also just look at it as, if Tom Brady or Peyton Manning had done that, nobody would have cared because they're also Hall of Fame quarterbacks and, like, oh, yeah, they have a really talented guy behind them, but they don't want to lose their jobs.
Did anyone care when Jimmy Garoppolo got locked out of TB12?
Some people did, but those were the anti-Tom Brady people, the pro-Bill Belichick people who might now be coming back around to being pro-Tom Brady. So,
yeah, see, this always bends back towards justice.
You're right. 617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here. We're talking Pats, OTAs, kind of what to expect from the Patriots. We'll hit on that a little bit more. We'll also touch on the Red Sox. Big, big win over the Orioles yesterday. Then game two got postponed, so we got a doubleheader today. We're taking you right up until Red Sox pregame, MassMutual pregame show right here at 12:05. But right now, Mitch is going to get you caught up with what's trending.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Alex Cora listing all of the potential possible third basemen for your Boston Red Sox. Mego, there were a few notable absences on that list.
Well, one notable. So let's back it up for a second.
Okay.
Because we have updates this morning from our own Rob Bradford, who says that Cora told everybody in the clubhouse. First, Alex Bregman was in the clubhouse, says he's going for an MRI. Cora says Bregman woke up feeling worse this morning. Mm. After yesterday, the first of what was supposed to be a doubleheader, Alex Bregman says, oh, actually, you know, when I came up and I'm awkward on that quad, it wasn't as bad as I thought, like immediately after the game, after getting it checked out. Has a night of sleep, wakes up, and it's actually worse.
Well, to be fair, normally when, like, you sleep on an injury like that, it stiffens up.
Yeah.
You wake up, you're like, oh, it really hurts. Get some, like, warm compresses on it. Maybe it'll start feeling a little bit better, hopefully.
Well, so it sounds like he's probably going to the IL.
Oh, no.
Which leaves you now with this, with this empty third base position, which one Rafael Devers was so eager to play in spring training.
He was pretty eager.
Remember, he told us he plays third.
He did.
And they said, Rafi, go put your glove away. You're going to be a designated hitter.
I believe his response was, no.
And it's just been this saga where now, look, we'll get into whether or not you think that Rafael Devers should be playing third base and whether that solves, that's the best way to solve this problem. I can tell you one thing. As bad as Rafi was at third base and as many errors as he committed, it's probably better than Connor Wong, your catcher, playing third.
Sure. Would he be your first choice to play third, though, at this point? Because to his credit, after a horrendous start to the season, he is lighting it up at the plate. Leads the league in RBIs, has hit two grand slams in like a week, has, 12 home runs, I believe, on the season. He leads the team in home runs. He had 8 RBIs in that game yesterday. I mean,
tied with the last time a Red Sox player
Mookie
had that?
Betts.
In 2015.
Yes.
Mookie Betts against Toronto.
Yeah, and so
took 10 years to do something that Mookie Betts did.
True. But, like, I just look at it and I'm like, at this point, I don't know that I want to mess with whatever he's doing. Like, what he has going right now is cooking, and it's cooking big time. And as much as he was so excited to play third before the season started, like, I don't know that I even want to go. I don't even know that I want to consider him to play third at this point, because I think there are other better options, especially if he's going
to
maintain.
Who's your better option? And then I'm going to get to what's irritating me about this whole thing.
One of the names that Alex Cora mentioned, I think, is a really good option. Sadan Rafaela. And the reason I think it's a really good option is Sadan is just a freak athlete. He's a really good fielder. I think that would work out fine. And then that would open up a position for Roman Anthony to come into your major league roster and actually start playing, which he should start playing. He's the number one prospect in baseball right now. He should start playing. Or, I don't know, the other guy I would consider at third base, a guy Alex Cora didn't necessarily mention, but Rob Bradford on X said that he didn't rule him out either, is Marcelo Meyer. Mm. Like, Marcelo Meyer has already shown you he can play short, he can play second, he can probably play third. He told Jones and Keefe before the season started, I don't care what position I play, I just want to be on the major league roster.
Yeah, he's reiterated that a couple times with media interviews that he's done out in Worcester. If there's a silver lining to this situation where obviously you don't want Bregman to be in and out of the lineup and not feeling himself.
Sure.
There's a silver lining. It's we keep hearing from very smart baseball minds like Lou Merlone that what is going to get these kids out of Worcester and into Fenway is injuries.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah,
so
you
this
can't
opens,
keep trotting out
right.
Nick Sogard and Abraham Toro.
This opens the door to, hey, now do you move Christian Campbell over to first base where he's been, you know, repping
practicing
a little
yep.
bit before games? And then you maybe put Marcelo Meyer at second, as you said, moving Sadan Rafaela. Does that open up the door to the outfield for Roman Anthony? And just this natural opportunity. Now, if Bregman comes back and you have to reshuffle that whole thing, I don't know. That's like an okay problem to have in my book.
Yeah, because if Roman Anthony comes up and he is crushing, then Rafaela can kind of be your utility guy and he can fill in the outfield, fill in the infield, and he kind of loses out when Bregman comes back. If Anthony struggles, then it's like, okay, we just send Roman Anthony back to AAA, get his swing back and get him cooking again and let Sadan go back to center field. Bregman slides back into third base. No problem. Everybody's fine.
Here's what bothers me a little bit about this situation. I think it was so apparent in that list that Alex Cora gave immediately after the game that they don't even want to have the conversation with Rafael Devers. What? They don't want to open that door back up because it took so much effort to close that door in spring training. And then it was so embarrassing to have the miscommunication once again about first base.
Sure.
And having to have John Henry fly out to a road game to have a face-to-face one-on-one with Rafael Devers. That is all so embarrassing and so amateurish that Cora is so obviously leaving Rafael Devers off the list there. And I would have been more satisfied if he said, Devers, we do not see him playing third. But instead, it's like tiptoeing around this situation where it's your $313 million guy who's a DH and was begging to play the position in spring training.
So, but like, do you think this is an organizational point of view, or is this an Alex Cora point of view? Because when you go back to the first base situation, Craig Breslow was seriously considering it, felt Rafi was probably the best option
right.
to move to first base, whereas Alex Cora, again, didn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. He didn't even want to broach the subject.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's organizational sloppiness. It reminds me of the Irish side of my family, where the Italian side of my family, everybody yells in each other's face, and then 15 minutes later, it's like, what are we ordering for dinner? And everybody's over it. Mm. And it's the Irish side, it's like, we don't talk about things, and then something gets through the grapevine, and then someone's very upset, and then somebody has a grudge against somebody else, and they're not on speaking terms for like 6 months, and are they going to come to the holiday? That's what the Red Sox feel like, where it's like, oh, Alex Cora doesn't want to go have the conversation with Rafael Devers about moving to first because he already had to have that whole smoothing over conversation, mm-hmm. no. multiple conversations in spring training. And Craig Breslow is the one with his front office who wants to execute that. So then John Henry actually has to do something with the organization where he goes out to have the conversation face to face with Rafael Devers because he's paying him so much money. And now it's like, this happens and Cord doesn't even want it to be a conversation. So, doesn't even want it to be a possibility.
Knowing that that conversation with John Henry happened, though, do you believe now that the organization... So do you think they're still on separate pages?
I think they're
pages?
Still sloppy. Yes, I think there is a major from all... Everything that we hear reported, I think that there are major communication problems within the organization. And it goes back to the offseason when they weren't talking to Rafael Devers in any serious way about Alex Bregman coming here. And when he brought it up to them, according to Sean McAdam of Mass Live, they said, that's just rumors from the media.
Yeah, don't listen to them, Rafi.
That is so bizarre. That is just a sloppy way to run your business. And so for me, I'm just feeling like the very early indication is don't even talk about Rafi at third. It's not going to be a thing. We're not even acknowledging the possibility. And at the same time, that will then, in a way, probably force them into bringing these young guys up, which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
But it's like this non-confrontation. It's a very passive-aggressive feeling over there, and I just think that is dysfunctional.
It is very passive aggressive. It feels very kind of weaselly at times.
Oh, you know, we said the other week, like there's a pack of weasels over there.
It's just Weasel City.
I don't know if
City.
I was with you or with John Lyons.
Yeah.
It's the Boston Weasels.
But like, it also feels like they're playing this like good cop, bad cop routine that's not going very well. Where
Craig
Cora Prezzo's
doesn't want to be the bad cop because
exactly.
He had to be the bad cop all spring training.
Well, but. And that's kind of what bugs me, and this is where I do lay some blame at Alex Cora's feet, is like, dude, you wanted Alex Bregman here more than anybody. You should have been very clear with Rafael Devers about how bad you wanted Alex Bregman
you
here.
You probably have the closest relationship with both of those guys.
100% he does.
Now,
he absolutely
Cora
does.
Might go, that's my job when we're actually at the baseball diamond. Your job as the front office, if you're signing somebody, is to figure out all of that.
Oh no, that's not. But that's not the case at all. Craig Breslow's job is to build the roster to the best of his ability, to make sure he gets as much talent on his roster and puts the best team together. Alex Cora is in charge of managing all these egos. That's why they pay him all this. That's why they gave him a contract extension last year. That is his duty as the manager, is to make sure that everybody's happy, on the same page, and moving in the right direction. And he did not do that. That is an Alex Cora issue, not a Craig Breslow issue. Breslow is simply doing what any GM is supposed to do and just gathering the best talent possible for the position. Also, a guy who didn't even want Bregman. Like, that's what bugs the crap out of me, is like, Alex Cora pounded the drum. We want Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman's like, he just went on and on about how good of a baseball player he is. The leader, the kind of player he is on a day-to-day basis. And Craig Breslow was clearly dragging his feet. That's why they didn't get the deal done right away. Eventually, Alex Cora wins out. And yet somehow, some way, Rafael Devers is mad at Craig Breslow, who didn't want Bregman in the first place. Like, that to me doesn't add up.
That's what I'm saying. It
Alex
feels
Cora's
passive
kind of
aggressive.
Weaseling his way around this. Like, oh, no, Rafi, it wasn't me, man. I'm just here. I'm your buddy. Like, no, Alex Cora, you need to step up and take charge and be responsible for these things, especially when it's your guy that they brought in.
So two thoughts here that I think are interesting. On the one hand, we have one text that says, how about Rafi just volunteering to help the team? The very next text from another number is, Devers is the hottest hitter in baseball. He and Cora are right to keep things status quo. Stop thinking Devers can do it all.
So
nobody thinks Devers can do it all. Nobody's asking Devers to play in the outfield he has crazily said in the past when they tried to move him to first. It's just a question of, is this something that can even be entertained with this guy? Have you reached a point where the relationship with Devers has become so inflexible and so fractured that it's not even, okay, he's hitting great.
Yep.
Obviously, he's extremely hot right now offensively. But are you at a point already in this guy's contract where you're saying, we can't even broach the topic?
This season?
Publicly,
yes,
100%. Or otherwise. I think that's pretty toxic.
100% it is. It's horribly toxic, but it's because of the absolute mismanagement of the entire situation by Alex Cora.
So you put it on Cora?
100%.
I think it's a combination of Cora. I think it's a combination of miscommunication from the front office.
Sure, and like the front office deserves...
I don't think it's maliciousness. I think it's just dysfunction.
Yeah, I think the front office deserves some blame, but like to me, it is... This is what you have Alex Cora for, and he is fumbling it left and right.
Right.
And then on top of it, the Not to even mention the actual in-game stuff where all these like late in games you're blowing leads and losing games you shouldn't be losing. That also falls at the feet of Alex Cora. And I, for one, have been someone who has defended Cora up until this, like up until the last few weeks, because like I've gotten to the point where I'm like, dude, what do you say you even do here at this point? Because all you're doing is just trying to be buddy buddy with the players and not actually managing them, and then you're screwing up the late game situations. Like, it's just and it's starting to bug the crap out of me. It's really starting to annoy me.
Remember when everybody wanted Cora to get an extension? There was so much talk about back in 2018. Oh, the like lineups, the changes he used to make in game, his adjustments. It wasn't the payroll that put them over the top. It was really Cora having that edge that way. We don't hear a lot of that now.
No.
I think that there's a lot of second guessing his obsession with, you know, like left-handed pitchers, right-handed batter, like that whole like left and left, and then going into the Garrett Crochet out after just over five innings the other night with the shorts start, and then Crochet says that he didn't know that ahead of time. Again, this is just like a little bit of sloppiness. I do think on the other side, because we got to take a quick break, we have to address a little bit of, you think Cora should wear this a lot? I think Cora may have the longest leash that I can remember in professional sports.
Interesting. Okay, 617-779-7937. Where do you stand on the current situation with the Boston Red Sox, the Alex Bregman injury, who's going to play third base, Rafael Devers? All of it will continue with the Boston Red Sox right here on Boston Sports Original.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
General WEEI. Mango and Chime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI, taking you right up until the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show, heading into the doubleheader today against the Baltimore Orioles. Second game got rained out yesterday, so they moved it to today.
Didn't need to see another as an Orioles fan. Didn't need a second helping of that yesterday.
That was an absolute beatdown late
in that
game.
What happened to my guy, Adley?
I don't know. That whole team has struggled all year now.
It's brutal. I mean, they moved on from the manager. Pretty sad. We had a couple of years of fun, but we'll see. We'll see what happens there.
Yeah, maybe they'll bounce back eventually. I mean, they have young talent. It's just they've been unable to do anything with it this season after having a pretty good year last year. But we've been talking a lot of Rafael Devers, a lot of Alex Cora, a lot about the Red Sox front office here. As Alex Bregman has suffered an injury, he went for an MRI this morning. He told Cora before going for the MRI that it now felt worse, according to reports, which is not the sign you want. And it seems as though he will be headed for the IL. But, Mego, there was something you wanted to address regarding the Rafael Devers situation, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, not just particularly about Rafael Devers, but about Alex Cora. And I want to bring this up because I was thinking about the Bruins' search for a head coach. Yeah. And I wrote this piece for WEEI on Friday that was about the average tenures of coaches in the different four leagues. So I was wondering, like, really, how quick is the turnover? And the average tenure for an MLB manager right now is 3 years. So there's like there's a ton of variety.
Okay.
But it's 3 years. And I think about Cora. I mean, the guy, he had the 2 years and he wins the World Series.
Yep.
And then there's the weird time in COVID. He gets suspended. And then the Red Sox are very eager to bring him back. And I think most people around this area felt like that was the right move.
Yeah.
He won the World Series. There's a stinky season after, but that World Series team was great, phenomenal. And since then, it's like you get to the postseason one time and all these last or nearly last place finishes. And once again, I mean, it feels like Groundhog's Day where you're sitting here and it's the most mediocre team in baseball.
They are.
Ownership has actually spent on the team this year. And the guy just got a 3-year guaranteed $21 million extension. I just can't remember, in the Boston area at least, a coach who got this long of a leash to be mediocre to bad season after season.
Because even Bill Belichick, like post Tom Brady, his leash ended up not being very long. He lasted, what, the Cam Newton year and two Mac Jones years, and then he was out.
And then he was out. And they let him go so far as to the craziness of the 2022 season.
And Alex Cora hasn't even made the playoffs since 2021.
Yeah, I mean, and so that's why I wonder, like, look, I think Cora is a good manager. I'm not a managerial expert in the MLB, but I do look at some point, he's got to wear some of this. Because having such a mediocre club when you have a bad payroll is understandable. And at some point you go, Alex Cora may be the only thing that this club has going for them. But when you spend the money that they spent and you put out that lineup yesterday for what was going to be the second game against the Orioles and you have Trevor Story batting cleanup, everybody has to take a look at this and go, what the hell is going on over there?
You have Carlos Narvaez hitting cleanup today. Carlos Narvaez.
This is me sitting here, no words.
Yeah, I agree. I have kind of come around at this point where I blame a lot of what has gone on, transpired this season, on Alex Cora. But I also think that, like, you need to kind of take a look even higher than Cora, even higher than the front office, and kind of look at John Henry for this, because when you think about it, if Cora does in fact have this really long leash because they love Cora.
And because they just guaranteed him all this money.
Yeah, they gave him the contract last year. Wouldn't you then have, I don't know, worked with Cora to hire a front office guy that Alex Cora wants? Because
isn't that kind of backwards?
Not necessarily. No, I think it happens in the NFL quite a bit that you hire a coach and then the coach helps you pick the GM, because that way the coach and GM's vision are the same. Either the GM should pick the coach or the coach should help
pick the GM. The way that they handled Cora is not so different than the way that they handled Devers when they signed his extension, which was like, things are really bad right now. Our front office keeps turning over and it seems to be, yeah, and we want to give something to the fans that inspires hope, and maybe to the clubhouse to some extent, because the guys certainly seem to love Cora and he's a player's manager. And so they go, boom, look, 3-year, $21 million extension. Don't you want to keep Cora here? This is great. And I just don't think that you have very much to show for it this year when you actually, I can't look at John Henry and say it's John Henry's fault this year. They spent money. They brought in, they signed free agents, and now they should have the kids coming up. And if there's anything that we know about Cora, it's like he wasn't super excited about having to go through the regrowth of the farm system these last several years. And now these kids are, he hasn't ruled out today, according to Rob Bradford, Marcelo Meyer being called up. So we'll see how he does with them. But I don't think he is really interested in like mentoring and developing super young, unproven talent.
No, I think that's fair. But at the same time, like the entire roster isn't super young, unproven talent. It would be like two or three guys. It would be Meyer, Anthony, and Campbell. Like those are all your young guys, and then the rest of them are all relatively established players and or good players. And like that's his job, is he needs to be able to kind of mesh the locker room, the old and the young. That's how you succeed in just about every sport. You introduce the new round of draft picks, you bring in the old veterans, you get them all on the same page, and you move forward. Like that's what Alex Cora is supposed to do. And I just think that there has been so much like inability to communicate between Cora and the front office and the players, and that it's just, it seems like a total S show.
It's starting to be almost like at least a once a month thing, if not multiple times a month, where again, Garrett Crochet is pulled after five innings. There's a lot that goes into that. Cora's trying to protect him for how much he's pitching at this point in this arc of his career, and trying to take on this further load as really the only like thing close to an ace that you have, and the only like real dependable starting pitcher that you have in your rotation right now. So I get that. But then after the game, it comes out Crochet says he didn't know that he was going to have a short start.
He had no idea. He was ready to go eight innings if he could. He was ready to go as deep as possible. Instead, he got pulled after 89 pitches.
And it's like, what? Okay. So it just seems like there's a lot of little things falling by the wayside. And I would just ask, can you remember in Boston sports somebody who had this much leash? I'm not saying Cora should go. It's just interesting to me that he gets this much leash, because it's a guy that on the face, the facts is he has as many suspensions from the MLB as he does championships here.
He does indeed.
And then on top of that, he's only got, what, one more appearance in the postseason? That's not a great track record. And
no.
You can keep going back to what the payroll was those years and the concentration on the minor league players in the farm system. But we're back at the major leagues level this year. And it doesn't look different to me.
Yeah, eventually that focus on the minor leagues needs to pay off, and you have to have a legitimate championship caliber roster.
Now is the time to prove it.
100%. That'll do it for me and Mego here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Thank you so much for tuning in today. The MassMutual Red Sox pregame show is coming up next here on WEEI, and then you can listen to the Shaws and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network for Game 1 of the Red Sox doubleheader on a beautiful Saturday here in the city of Boston. Thanks again. We will be back actually Monday morning filling in for the Greg Hill Show, 6 a.m. Monday, Mego and Scheim edition of Memorial Day. Please tune in, and we will talk to you then. See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.